So today, we're going to have more discussion. But what I'm going to run through first, I've got six guidelines for what I would tell you about baptism talks to keep in mind. When I emphasize these are guidelines, this is not me telling you how to raise your kids because I don't know how to do it either. We're not going to use any verses, or well, there's some verses in here, but we're not going to say this rule comes from a verse of the Bible because there aren't any verses of the Bible that talk about kids and baptism. So we just have to kind of look at some verses that have some general principles and say, that. Okay. And then at the end, I'm going to give you kind of my final thought on it as the minister talking to you, the nuts and bolts of it, and then we want to have some discussion about it. So I'll just move through these relatively quickly, six basic guidelines for the baptism conversation with your kids. Number one, don't confuse curiosity with maturity. Sometimes I talk to parents and they say, well, they asked about it. They were really interested. You know, they insisted on it. They wanted to go do it. They were really adamant. Who cares? They're a kid, right? Of course they're curious. Being curious and adamant about it is not the same as obviously they know what they're getting into. Is there anything else a kid does that we treat that way? Your kid has their first crush in second grade and wants to get married. You're like, well, they insisted, and they were really curious. And, or they asked you about sex for the first time. I guess they're ready to have sex. They asked about it. No, we don't do anything else that way, right? So just curiosity's fine. I'm glad they're asking questions. Don't say they asked questions, therefore they're ready to be baptized. That's not the same thing. That's step one of what I hope is an impressive process of talking to your kids. You're the parent. You get to kind of set the pace for that, like you do everything else in their life. You set the pace for how they approach that. So them being curious is great. Don't discourage curiosity. We've talked about that through the whole class. Don't do anything to discourage curiosity. But you do get to say, you know, pump your brakes a little bit. Let's talk about this. Let's come back to it and keep talking about it. Number two, don't confuse knowing enough with growing enough. This one's really important because this is the one, if there's one thing I want to complain about to parents, and I've got a room full of you, as a minister and not a parent, this is the thing I hear all the time. Well, my kid knows enough to be baptized. Why did you think that knowing had anything to do with it? Knowing is one of several components of growing up. Kids develop intellectually, especially boys, before they develop any other kind of maturity. So I have Thomas the Tank Engine. Well, that's not even Thomas, is it? Which one is that? Which is the red one? He's red.
Yeah, it's red, yeah.
Oh, it's for...
The side of him is
blue. I don't know. And that's kind of my point. At like 4 years old, Lucas can tell me the name of every engine and device on the island of Sodor, right? Knowledge-wise, he is able, and this is what was strange, as I was trying to talk about Bible stuff with him, for the Stars Wall, like remembering the apostles, I was like, how is it possible that you know Thomas the Tank Engine, but you can't remember Thomas the Apostle, right? But they have definitely selective capacity that they can engage with a huge amount of information and memorize it very quickly. Lucas has reached that age where he is full of trivia from like little YouTube videos and stuff, and, hey, Dad, did you know the... I was like, oh, great, here we go. And it's this, you know, long, trivial conversation about information. Intellectually, he's probably at or above his peers. Even where his peers are is pretty smart. At that age, they're developing very quickly intellectually. That's not the same thing as having a cognitive ability that goes with maturity. Comprehension as opposed to recitation. So my point is, if my threshold was only knowledge, can you tell me the following information? What is baptism for? Baptism is for the remission of sins. Why did Jesus die? He died for my sins. I can get a child to recite that information at a very young age. And the way I know that's true is because we have a wall full of kids who have learned to recite information at a very young age. Does it make sense? That's not the same as growing. It's just knowing. And knowing is great. We encourage it. I just don't want to confuse the two. Okay. So we had a conversation earlier a little bit about death and how kids interact with death. They can say the words a long time before they actually understand the concept of death or passing of life and things like that. There's a lot of concepts. Lucas the other day, I mean, just as an example, I forget what sentence he said. So it was a like intricate, detailed sentence that was like clearly he had read out of a, I don't know, encyclopedia or something. I mean, it was this huge sentence full of information. I was like, wow, you know all that? Yeah, I did. And then at the end of it, hey, what did that word mean that I said? He knew that this was a true statement and he could repeat it and pronounce it correctly, but didn't actually know some of the substance of it, because there's different levels of knowing and growing. So when people tell me my kid knows enough to be baptized, that's a red flag for me to say, well, that's one of four or five things I want to know about, but that's not the same as developing, because kids develop intellect very early. Number three, don't confuse fear with obedience. Can I beg you never to have this conversation with your kids? What if you were to die tonight? What if you were in a car crash on the way home? You can terrify kids. That's actually fairly easy, right? Mm-hmm. So, Celine's not in here. So by the way, Celine's teaching your kids about baptism down the hall. They're doing the baptism of Jesus today in class, so you'll have lots of opportunities to have these conversations when she's done. Celine left me alone with Lucas, which is always a bad idea, for an afternoon, and we were going to watch a movie. I was like, hey, want to watch a movie? And he's like, yeah, sure. I was like, hey, this movie has a lion in it. You'll like it. And it's The Ghost in the Darkness, and the lions eat people, right? Lucas was a pool of terrified tears the entire time. I was like, well, this was a terrible idea. You can't stop now. We got to see what happens to the lions, you know? And so I've not been forgiven, and it was like a week of him sleeping in my bed to punish me for it. But I'm a terrible parent. Point being, can you terrify kids? Yeah. You can motivate them based on fear and terror. That's actually very easy to do. Okay. But fear of loss is a powerful primal motivator. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. Okay. Beginning. Not the end. It is the beginning. Fear of loss is this deep human psychological principle. We use it back when I was in sales all the time, you know, don't take this deal, you're going to miss out, you know, because you're going to lose something that if you don't do it. So fear and that kind of motivation is extremely powerful. Problem is, fear is an imperfect motivation, which can sometimes prevent the development of love. 1 John 4, verse 18 says, perfect love casts out fear. There is no fear in love. Okay. So I can, at a very early age, convince kids that God is a scary being who will fling you into hell if you aren't baptized, and I will have kids lined up ready to be baptized. I don't know if those kids will ever learn to love God, because I had to convince them they needed to be rescued from God. Right? They needed Jesus to come save them from God. That's not the gospel. The gospel is not Jesus saving you from God, who's the bad guy, who wants to fling you into hell. Right? God sends his son to save us from the consequences of our own choices and sins. But that's a more complicated thought. Right? That's a different kind of motivation. I'm responsible for this problem I'm in. Even that word, responsible. That's more complicated. So I would just be very cautious about confusing fear with obedience. And the great perfect Bible example of that is the story of Jonah, who's told to go to Nineveh. He says no. He goes to Tarshish, swallowed by the great big fish, spat back on the shore. And God says, no, really, go to Nineveh. And he goes. At the end of the story, God saves the people of Nineveh, and Jonah does what? You know? Throws a fit. He pouts. Why? Because he wasn't obeying. He wasn't doing something because he believed in God, was motivated by God, loved God, cherished God's values and principles. He was going because he didn't want to get swallowed by a fish again. I mean, if there's a fish one time, who knows what's next? He is terrified. God has made it very clear, if you don't do what I say, bad things happen. So Jonah's like, yeah, great. And he goes. But we don't call that obedience. And God chews him out at the end of the book for good reason. He did what he was supposed to do, but he didn't do it out of any good motivation. So the people of Nineveh benefit, and God's happy about that, but God's not very happy with Jonah, because on the inside, he was just going through motions. I can build an entire church based on fear if you want. People have done it for generations, but that's not healthy. So just be careful with that. I'm not saying there's no such thing as hell. I'm not saying you shouldn't be afraid of the consequence of sin. I'm just saying be very careful. Don't confuse fear with obedience. And then part two, don't use fear as a spiritual motivator for children. People often assume that, like, back in the day, we had those fire and brimstone sermons and they saved lots of people. Read the book of Acts and look for sermons that use punishment as a motivation to convince people to be baptized. I actually can't find any, with two possible exceptions. In Acts 17:30, Paul, after giving the kind of spiel about Jesus, at the very end says, God no longer winks at sin and will someday judge the world by his son whom he's raised from the dead. It's two verses in a sermon. That's close to being, do this or you'll burn. And that's as close as you get. And the second example is 24:25, where Paul says, he reasoned with him of judgment and temperance, and he quaked. His knees knocked, because he was actually afraid of his own. He looked at his own sinful life, and he looked at what Paul was saying about judgment, and he was actually afraid. Those are the two examples, and they're like one-verse examples. They're not stories. They're not sermons. In the book of Acts, what are the long sermons about? Jesus came, Jesus died for you, Jesus is raised from the dead. That's what the sermon's about. There isn't a lot of examples of preaching, now kids, if you don't do this, you're going to burn. You don't find that in Acts. That's not biblical. Do sometimes people have candid conversations about sin in the Bible? Sure do. But you don't see them going out to the mission field and trying to frighten people into a baptistry. So why would we do that with our kids? Be very careful about using fear as a spiritual motivator. I'm not saying it can't be used. Fear is the beginning of wisdom. It's a place to start. Most people get interested in religion because they're scared of something, right? They might die, they had a near-death experience, something really bad happened, they better look around. But that doesn't get them anywhere. They have to keep going. So fear can kind of wake you up sometimes. That's fine. But using it as a motivation for your life is actually just recipe for disaster. Instead, Romans 2 and verse 4 says it's God's kindness that produces repentance. That's a crazy verse. God's kindness produces repentance. You repent because you find out God is a marvelous God and you want to do what he says. When it's based on fear, it looks more like Jonah, and I'm not even sure that counts as repentance because Jonah never changed his mind. He just decided to get himself out of trouble for a while. So just be careful with fear as a spiritual motivator, especially for children, because based on the previous rule, we know they're susceptible to it. Number five, don't create disinterest by being disinterested. Having said all the things I've said, it makes it sound like I'm opposed to you talking to your kids about baptism, and I wanted there to be clear. No, I want you to talk to your kids about baptism deliberately. There is an old Jesuit saying, it's attributed to Loyola, but I don't know if he actually ever said it. Give me the child for the first 7 years and I'll give you the man. In other words, Catholic educational doctrine is that by the age of seven, if you let me teach them, I will have made them who they're going to be. Teachers in high school, how true is that? How much work has already been done by the time they get to that level? Yeah. Like, the high school, it's a difficult time to break it back down and say, let's build some character here, right? Either they've got the foundation laid for behavior or they don't. At this point, so I would say that you being, when they ask you about baptism, don't say, I don't want to talk about that. Yeah. Well, your kid has learned that my dad doesn't care about that stuff. My mom doesn't care about that stuff. Guess what they don't care about now? You have to be enthusiastic about this conversation. You're not going to shove them into baptistry. Be careful about all that. But you do have to be interested when they ask you Bible questions. And I know that's hard. Not because you're not interested, but because kids only ask those questions when you're like cooking or building something. Yesterday, we're putting in a post. I've done a 24-inch hole. I set my post. I'm putting my gate in. And I've got like stuff in my hands like this. And Lucas says, Dad, I was wondering. I said, no. You are not wondering anything until I'm done. I cannot do that at this instant. That's the only time kids ask questions is when you're like completely occupied. You're going to have to get unoccupied sometimes. Occasionally, you're going to have to drop your hammer and say, well, let's talk about that. I didn't do a good job of that yesterday. But you're going to have to find those times. Because if you're not interested, eventually they're going to get the hint. Okay? You're interested in other stuff. Can I wag my finger at you now? When they want to talk about stuff you're interested in, you make time for them. If they're interested in hunting and you're interested in hunting, they're suddenly interested. And you have all the time in the world for them. If you're interested in sports and they're getting interested in sports, you suddenly have all the time in the world for them. Folks, and I'm sure, I'm just talking about father stuff. I'm sure mother stuff works the same way, right? Whatever it is, if they get interested in your thing, you drop everything and get interested in it with them. When that's over, it's over. That's bad news. They get the hint. They know what matters to you. Baptism and Christianity in general had better be one of those things that you drop everything to get interested in, or they will get the hint very early on. And then number six, this is my big one. Don't forget that you are the parent. Okay? Our whole culture is upside down, that we have seemed to forget the role of parent and child. Your child is a minor, a person under the age of full responsibility, by definition. As long as they're in your home, they are not fully responsible. You like that little quote? Is that fun, right? I am not your friend. I am your parent. I will stalk you. I will lecture you. I will drive you crazy. I will be your worst nightmare. Hunt you down when you need to come home because I love you, right? You're the parent, okay? That's your job. You have to take responsibility for that. So by all means, recognize, let your children grow, give them some space to grow, but they are a minor. If your child, and let me just say this, and I'm going to say it very cautiously because it's going to sound like I'm saying never baptize a kid. I'm not saying that, okay? If your child signed a document today, if I put a contract in front of them, took them to my office, here's a contract. I would like you to pledge your lifelong membership to the church. And they sign the contract. What would that contract be worth? What would a judge say to that contract? When I come to them at 30 and say, you're a member of this church, you signed this at age 15. Nothing. It would be an invalid document. A judge would say that person wasn't legally responsible. They weren't capable of signing a lifelong contract to do anything. Okay? If your kids perform their first fake wedding in the backyard and with crayon write out their marriage certificate, does that hold up in court? They're minors. Even if you printed one off and signed, hadn't signed it, they're minors. Okay? Baptism is something like a lifelong commitment to Christianity. And they're minors. Do you understand that there's easily an issue there that has to be considered? That you have to be thoughtful of that. And so you're the parent. You've got to guide that conversation. Because it is an enormous decision. And they're a minor. You have to be involved. Including saying it's time to pump the brakes a little bit. We've got to slow this down. Or, yeah, you should take this seriously. Okay? So don't ever stop being a parent. Parents are the custodians of a child's maturation, Galatians 4, 1 through 2. Right? That passage says, even if the young little boy is Bruce Wayne and he's about to inherit the entire world, right? His butler is actually in charge of him. It's actually a Batman verse, you didn't know that. It says a butler outranks a child, even if the child is the heir of the fortune. Okay? You're the adult. Be the adult. For better or worse, no one will have more influence in your child's early life than you. Okay, last point, and I promise I'll be quiet. One scenario that does happen sometimes is that a child, at the end of a sermon, without a lot of announcement or a prequel, makes their way down to the front row. At that point, you have now made it my decision. Okay? Not as a parent, as a minister. Now I have to do something, and your kid is there with me with 200 people staring at us waiting to go to dinner. And I have to make a decision about what happens next. If you have not had a conversation with your kid and this happens, I'm saying this very politely, it stops being your decision at this point. I'm going to talk to your kid on the front row. And if you come down there and like, hey, let me talk to him, and be like, not now. There's like, this is not the time for this conversation. Hey, let's talk about baptism. Everybody will wait. It'll be fine. Right? We're not doing that now. Now I have to make a decision. I have to talk to your kid in 60 seconds and do the job that should have been done already and decide, do I need to baptize this person or not, or send them back to their seat? Right? not a fun part of my job, right? It takes some discernment that I don't always have. So my conversation with you then is, it would be nice for you to be involved in your child's life and be aware that they're interested in baptism and to talk to them so that you aren't shocked when one day they push you out of the way to run down to the front of the aisle and now it's kind of in Ben's wheelhouse to decide what to do. Okay? I'll do it. I'm just saying. It's better when you've had a conversation with them first because I don't know your kid. I don't even learn their names till they start coming to camp. Confession. It's the truth. I know Brody and Harris number 2 and Harris number 3 because Brody's been to camp. Okay? I don't even bother with names until it's time to camp. So when they come down there and I'm like, oh, you're one of those kids. Yeah, of course. I know whether you're ready to be baptized or not. This is not a good scenario. But I'll do it. So I prefer you have this conversation first. In a perfect world, how would this work? You would be talking to your kids. You would find different ways to talk about the Bible with them. Maybe make them read something. There's lots of little books. If you come to me and say, Ben, I'd like to have my kids read something. I've got little books. I've got bigger books. I've got books on what you need to know to be baptized. I've got books on... You pick a topic. I'll find you something. And you're going to go over it with your kid. Okay? We'll order you something. And that's one of the things the church would like to do, is to help you out with that conversation. You have that conversation. You bring them to me when you think you're getting somewhere. When you think we're at a point where this kid's eventually going to knock you over and run down to the front, yeah, it would be nice to have a conversation with me at that point. Okay, you don't have to. You're not obligated to pass Ben's catechism class to be baptized. It's not a requirement. But in a perfect world, you come to me and say, Ben, my kid's really interested in baptism. Would you be interested in talking to them? And yeah, you bet. We'll schedule 15 minutes and have just an early conversation. Hey, tell me what you're thinking. This is not in depth. I am going to ask you to leave the room because they're making an adult decision. I don't want them to go in. Right? A kid who does this when I ask them a question is not a kid I want to baptize, to be honest with you. I shooed Tanya because Riley tried that one. She's like, I don't know. And I was like, and Tanya went away. And I was like, okay, now try again. What are we doing here? Yeah. And we had a conversation. And we might have several conversations. You know, you might say, well, go think about this. Here's a couple of verses to go read. Come back and talk to me about it. My theory is if they forget that I told them to go read that verse, then they probably weren't very interested in the first place. If they remember and they come back, then maybe they're kind of interested. So we'll talk again. And then we'll probably schedule it. I mean, I'm not opposed to a kid coming down unannounced and being baptized. It's not a problem. Just probably because they're a kid and it's not a mission field environment, I'll probably say, okay, well, you're ready tonight. Well, do you want to do it tonight? Or do you want to think about it a little more? And how about Sunday morning? Or we'll actually talk about it. We'll have that option. And they'll pick, not you, them. And they're going to tell me what they want to do. If you want to baptize your child, arrangements for that can be made. Some parents feel awkward about it. I'm happy to let you. It's not a sacred thing that I have to do. Magic powers in the baptistry. I can show you how it's done. It's pretty straightforward. I could even go down there with you if you'd like, and we can make that work. Or I can do it. Some parents like to have the preacher do it. Some kids like to have the preacher do it. Or the youth minister do it. Okay, so there's a couple options there. Or an elder they like. Some of them are like, yeah, I really like Bobby. Let's have him do it. Nobody ever asked for Keith. But that would be the ideal situation. Okay, I'm done. Questions and comments? What are you curious about baptism conversation-wise? And I'm going to expect a good conversation here. So like 2 months, I've been hearing nothing but, oh, we want to talk about that one. And so if you stare at me blankly, I'm going to be terribly disappointed.
All right, then I'll jump in.
No, not you. Somebody else. Go ahead.
Okay, so you gave the whole spiel about they're a minor in society. Now prove it to me in the Bible.
In the Bible?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where's the concept? Where's the idea? Because that was a big struggle for us. We talked with Brody for a year.
Yeah.
And he kept pushing it and pushing it. And so out of a lot of the things that you've said,
yeah,
we talked to elders, we talked to preachers, we talked to just regular members. Show me in the Bible or give me some kind of biblical example that...
if I must lie.
It's kind of like what you said. There's nothing there.
Yeah, so the short answer is no. That there's nothing there that clearly identifies even the concept of a minor. Galatians 4:1-2 does say that when they are a child, they are a minor and do not have responsibilities. So that's a biblical concept. It doesn't say when they stop being a minor.
Okay. So what do you tell a child that asks you, if I die, if they ask me that, if I die, how do I look at them and answer them in the Bible? Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, right.
You know, until you hit this age, you're good.
The only verses that have helped me are this list, where for the purpose of census, they didn't count anybody as an adult till they were 20. Does that mean they didn't have any adult responsibilities? No, probably that does not mean that. I suspect they had a lot of adult responsibilities. But as far as some of them, I suspect, were married by the time they were 20. But in terms of taking a census, when do you count as an adult in Israel? About 20. So does that give me a hard and fast guideline? Still no. But in my mind, if I'll put it this way, I'll put it in a different point of view. The worst case scenario does happen. Tragic car accident, child dies at 15. And they were never baptized and never made any confession of faith or anything like that. And somebody comes to me and says, well, what about that? I'm not going to say, yeah, they're going to burn. They weren't baptized. No, I'm not going to say that at all. I'm going to say they were a minor. They were at home. God knows the difference between adults and kids better than I do. And I think there is a transition period there where God is fully aware of what's going on better than we are. So in those situations, I don't get in a hurry. And when once in a while someone will come to me and mention a teen in the youth group who hasn't been baptized, that kid's 16 and haven't been baptized. They're driving. You know, they could die. They could something. I'm like, yeah. They're also like still a child credit on their parents' taxes. I mean, in every other way, their mama can put them over their knee and spank them, right? They're still a minor, and God recognizes that. So at that age, if in that transition period, if they come to me and say, I want to be baptized, and we go through the whole process, I'm not going to like prevent them from the baptistry. But neither am I fearful that if I don't get them into the baptistry, they're lost. So that to me is what that transition, that adolescence is for, is to kind of make our way there. But it shouldn't be based on if they don't make a confession of faith in here somewhere, they're going to be lost. It's based on when are they checking the boxes in their own development to want to do that. And that's why I do make it a personal that's why I put it back on you guys. That there's only so much I can do. Ma'am. Yeah, I am looking. So one, you know, I'll repeat the know enough is not grow enough, and I'll just keep repeating that. It's not purely intellectual, but one of the things I do look for is when I sit down with the kids, I ask open-ended questions. Now, when I get them in the baptistry, I'm going to ask yes or no questions. Do you believe that Jesus is the Christ? Because I don't want them to goof it up in front of 200 people, right? But when I'm quietly talking to them, I ask open-ended questions, and what I'm looking for is, can you articulate what it is you think you believe in a way that's coherent to me? Sometimes I get really surprisingly good answers. Sometimes I get really surprisingly bad answers. And I think, I'm not saying being inarticulate is a requirement for baptism either, right? That you have to be a great speaker to be able to, unless you can write a really good 5-point essay about baptism, you're not. That's not my point either. But I am looking for, in terms of confessing your faith, can you make a statement that is coherent enough about the gospel that says to me, I am a believer who is ready to confess my faith in Christ in a way that has some substantive meaning? That is one of the things I look for. It's not the only one. I'm also looking, I think I mentioned before, I ask about sin as my way of checking kind of emotional and psychological development. Can you take responsibility for your own actions? Do you carry guilt? I mean, I know modern psychology says guilt bad. One of the things I look for is, do you have any guilt? A child who is incapable of guilt is not ready for baptism, because that means they're incapable of responsibility. Guilt is a God-given warning signal that says, I've missed one of my responsibilities. And if you can't have some form of that, it can be oppressive, it can get out of whack, but if you don't have some sense of guilt, there was something I was supposed to do and I didn't. There's something I did that I shouldn't have done. Then I say, well, you may have the intellectual part, but you haven't developed emotionally and psychologically, to be able to take responsibility for your own actions. So those are two major check thresholds for me. Can you make a coherent confession of faith? Something. It doesn't have to be the New York City Catechism, but something. And can you demonstrate to me at some level an intellect or a emotional response to responsibility and failure? Those are the two big boxes to check. So a young lady, she was 15, wanted to be baptized at camp a couple of years back. It's probably the only 15-year-old I've ever said no to. But I asked her, why do you want to be baptized? And her confession of faith was, because I always want to be baptized at camp. I said, I'm not feeling like that's a reason to be baptized. Is there anything about like Jesus or the gospel you want to tell me? And at no point did she ever give me a sentence that had Jesus in it, or gospel in it, or sin, or anything. And so I said, listen, it's Tuesday. We're going to be here all week. Go think about it. I wasn't telling her no. Go think about it. What is it about baptism? Or maybe you got questions. Maybe you're not sure. Maybe you want to ask me. Come back to me with a question anytime this week, and we will talk about it, because I think it's important. I think it's great that you're asking. But because it's at camp and you want to be baptized, that's not a reason that's going to motivate me to want to do this with you. She never came back to me. Never brought it up. And never at any time said anything about it. And I don't feel bad that I put that off, because I wanted to see something from her that indicated faith in Christ, not a desire to be baptized at camp, because that would be a thing to do. Does that make sense? My threshold is, I'm all talk, by the way, I'm all bark. My threshold, when it comes to it, is pretty low. I very rarely turn kids away from baptism, okay? But use the word Jesus in a sentence is going to be, you know, one of those thresholds for me that I'm going to need something from you there. Other thoughts and comments?
I struggled more with Riley than I did with Tucker.
Okay.
Because Tucker...
Because she's a redhead.
No, yeah, that was a lot. But Riley, when she came to me at first, I was thinking she wanted more out of peer pressure. And that was something, you know, I talked to her for a long time about. And I was one of those that got baptized young, came back as an adult, got baptized again. And I told her, I don't want you to go through that same guilt, those same feelings that I did. So Riley and I talked about it a lot longer than Tucker and I did. And I just knew with Tucker that he was, when he came and asked, he was ready. I mean, he, you know, his faith was strong, and he wanted to do more in church. He wanted to be able to be a member and be able to do more as a member in church, all those things. But with Riley, I did put her off a little bit longer and talk to her a lot more, because I was really afraid with her at the beginning of the conversation that it was more about peer pressure.
Yeah. So that, by the way, is perfect. So what did the parent do? Aware of differences in her child's development. They're not the same child. I'm not going to treat them the same. Was aware of influences that might affect the decision, and allowed that to set the tone for how the conversation developed. That's all I'm asking, right? Because I can't do that for your kids. I can talk to them about doctrine. I can't tell them what motivates them. You've got to do that part of it. When they get down to me, all I can do is ask them questions. You're the one that's going to know, well, at school the other day something happened and now they want to do it. Okay. That's something you got to know. I don't know that. Is that a good reason or a bad reason? I don't know. You got to tell me. Okay. Ma'am.
I think something else, just with me personally, my younger brother was baptized before me. We were both kind of teenagers. But my parents never really talked to us about baptism. We talk about Bible class and what we learn and everything, but the topic of baptism directly was never one that we really talked about with our parents. And so when it came to that time, I didn't know how. My mom approached me, said, hey, have you thought about this since your brother was? And I was like, yeah, I've been thinking about it, but I just, you know, I didn't know how to approach them to say, yes, I'm ready, I want to do this. Even though I'd seen people, you know, go forward, I've seen baptism and stuff like that, but when it came down to the nuts and bolts of it, of saying, yes, I want to do this, and talking to my parents, it was a little different because we've never really talked about it before.
And I really mean that when I say that they're a minor and you're the parent and you set the pace. It might be that you do need to nudge it a little bit, that they get to a point where you know your kid and you know they're thoughtful of it, but maybe they're the shy and reserved type and just don't know how to say, I want to do the next thing. So maybe you go and say, have you thought about this? Are you thinking about it? Don't shove them, but nudge. Are you thinking about it? Okay. I think that's good because I've had adults that I've had to nudge. I mean, full-grown adults who were like, actually, yeah, I was wanting to be baptized. I just didn't know how to ask. I was like, well, you say, I want to be baptized, and we do it. It's not complicated. But, you know, in their head, they just weren't sure. Anybody here when Denny and Kay Robinson were baptized? They had been talking about it for weeks and had been studying with Lonnie, who was here at the time, and they were ready to go. And then I preach a sermon, and it's invitation time, and I'm like, and nothing happens. So finally, just something hadn't connected. Lonnie walks up to them during an invitation song and stands behind him, and he goes, Denny, this is when you do that. And he's like, oh. And they come down, both of them come down the aisle, and we baptize them that day. Like somebody literally had to say, now. They were completely ready to go. It was just an awkwardness of taking that first step out in the aisle. So if adults can have that problem, I know kids can. So yeah, you do need to have a chat. All right. If you end up with more questions because I filibustered and talked too much, we can stall the beginning of next week's lesson if you have more to talk about. But otherwise, we'll move on. Okay? Thanks, guys.